Welcome back to another edition of the Positive View of Rural podcast. Today on the line with me is a return guest, Donna Maria Coles-Johnson, who I just always call Donna Maria because it seems like that's enough of a name for anybody. Welcome back, Donna Maria.
Becky, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here with you and your audience.
Well, okay, so last time you and I talked, we promised, we did a big rant. You know, you and I ranted about personal responsibility and if stop waiting on those other people to save you. And it was a wonderful rant you and I had together. But I thought it would be nice to invite you back and let you actually tell a little bit of your story and share a little bit about who you are and make it more about you instead of you and I picking on everybody else this time.
Perfect.
So let's start with a theme that you're using at your podcast. Why don't you tell us about your Women, Wealth, and Wow theme that you're using at your own podcast this season and how you ended up picking that?
Yes, thank you so much, Becky. Well, the Indie Business Podcast is focusing on Women, Wealth, and Wow this season. It's 12 episodes of that topic, and I thought it was important, but I also thought it was fun. I'm a small business owner myself, as you know, and I mentor and coach other small business owners, and most of them are women. So the topic of women in business is timely, but also very personal for me. And wealth is also always timely forever, but I think the ability for women, the ability that women have today to define wealth on their own terms and pursue it in the ways that suit them professionally and personally are just endless today. And it's fun to see how women have done that. I know we had you on the podcast recently. So we talked about this topic with you and how you have defined wealth on your own terms. It's financial, but it's not just financial. And so I thought those two things would come together very well in a series. And, you know, lastly, we all have to, as entrepreneurs, figure out how to, number one, continually stay wowed with our own endeavors, right? We have to be excited. We have to be on fire for what we're doing. Otherwise, it's no fun to pursue it. But also, how do we wow our customers and our clients and our friends? How do we continue to offer them things that are helpful to them that make them say, wow, this was great. I'd like to do this again, or I'd like to tell a friend. So those three things together it really just came to me one night, what a great combination of ideas to share with other people and to help, to proliferate throughout the internet and all around the world, those three ideas, just to be encouraging to other people and uplift them and let them see how other people define wealth and pursue it on their own terms so that they would have more ideas and insights to pursue their own.
So tell me about what wealth means to you, because in small towns, if you live and work out of a small town, you probably have a different definition of wealth than someone that has moved to the big city and is drawing a large salary and has an important title and all of the trappings that go with wealth in a major metropolitan area. Wealth to a small town can be somewhat different. So tell us what your small town is, and does that affect your definition of wealth?
Well, it kind of does and it kind of doesn't. First, I'll tell you what my small town is. It's my adopted hometown of Monroe, North Carolina, population somewhere around 40,000-ish. And it's a suburb of Charlotte. It's about 35 minutes south of Charlotte, North Carolina, which is a major city. My hometown is Washington, D.C. So interestingly, I have, this sort of dual approach or in terms of physically where I have been. But I've been in Charlotte for 8 years now. So that's a pretty long time. And honestly, my definition of wealth has evolved, but not necessarily because I'm in a small town, really just because I've been living and building a business all these years. And in a nutshell, my definition is opportunity, because I believe that wherever you are, wherever you're planted, you've got to bloom there, whether you like it or not. Some people are, you know, their spouse might get a job in another city and up they go. They have to pack up everything and move, and it's an adjustment, but we still have to bloom where we're planted. My family and I made a decision to move here from our hometown 8 years ago, and it was an adjustment, and it's a different kind of adjustment for each one of us. But for me, the overall approach has always been to find the opportunity here and then create what I want out of it. And that to me is wealth, to be able to do that, to have the freedom and the ability to find opportunity and or create opportunity and then pursue it so that you can enjoy your life and help and serve others at the same time.
So you've lived in your adopted hometown there for about 8 years. I know that you've been, you've had the Indie Business Network for longer than that, since 2000, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, 15 years.
So tell us what the Indie Business Network is and why you started that business and how you made that transition from being, from your business being based in Washington, D.C. mm-hmm. to being in Monroe.
Okay. Sure. The Indie Business Network is a trade organization that serves creative and handmade entrepreneurs. So our members are people who make the amazing products that you see at your local farmers markets, that you see in the local on the local shelves at your hometown Whole Foods market, for example. And we offer mentoring and coaching services for them. And we have a very robust product liability insurance program that's affordable for small businesses and specifically geared toward their handmade products. So we have webinars and in-person events and coaching calls and all sorts of things. It's an ongoing virtual program that has some physical aspects to it as well. So we have about 1,300 members across the country and a few international too. So when I started in 2000, Becky, my motivation was to help people who made products understand and empower themselves on how to sell them. Because I was coming into contact as a manufacturer myself, I had a cosmetics company, I was coming into contact with so many people who did what I did. They made the products that they wanted to sell, but they didn't know how to sell them or market them. And honestly, my products were not as good as theirs, but I was a better marketer. So my results were different, not because my products were better, but because I knew how to market them. So I decided to create the network as a way to help them understand and embrace marketing principles and learn how to sell. Because no matter how good your product is, if you can't sell it, it kind of doesn't matter. It sounds awful to say that, but it's true. Because you'll have a lot of nice products on your shelf and they look nice, but they're not feeding you. So,
well, you and I are both known for giving kind of this advice that may sound a little bit of mean, a little hard, but you know, if it's doesn't change the fact that it's absolutely true. If you make the best product in the world, but nobody knows about it, you won't sell any.
That's true. And that is, you know, what I've seen over the past just even 5 years is a huge growth in the number of people, a huge increase in the number of creative entrepreneurs and artists and, you know, small business owners who are embracing these principles and really taking them to heart and understanding the importance and really empowering them and getting more confident in being able to do it themselves. And that's exactly why I formed IBN, so that I would be able to do my part to make that happen. But I have seen so many of our members grow in this area. And as they grow in this area, their products get better, their websites get better, their presentations of themselves get better, their Twitter cover images get better. The whole entire dynamic shifts once you embrace the concept of understanding how to be transparent, putting yourself out there, and how that connects your audience and your target customers to what it is that you have to offer. So I've seen so much growth and so much expansion in this area. It's very exciting to see when that happens, because I can watch it. I can watch a person from the time I meet them to, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road, and I just lean back and smile and say, that's it, you got it, girl, go. And it makes me feel so good to be able to offer that and help people in those areas.
So the concept of transparency and putting yourself out there and being exactly who you are and not trying to pretend to be Procter & Gamble, but just be yourself and make your own products, those concepts of marketing, I think, have their roots in, or at least a connection to, a relationship with being from a small town. That type of authentic connection and community comes from being from a small town. Now, you were living in D.C., but we know that you have some small town background even before that, and we'll come around to that in a little bit. But I want to start with how did you make that transition from D.C. to the small town and take your business with you?
Well, my business is portable. I always sort of laugh and say I could do this from an igloo as long as I have a Wi-Fi connection. I might be cold, but I could still do it. we decided, I have two children, my husband and I have two children. And when we moved here shortly before we came, the economy had crashed. My husband lost his job. And we were looking at our children starting school and not being altogether happy with the school system in the district where we lived. And so all these things came together to force us to make a decision about whether to stay and whether to go. So whether to stay or whether to go. And if to go, where to go. So we narrowed it down to five cities, and we chose one that was close to where we lived at the time, but we also we ended up choosing Charlotte because the school system was one of the main reasons. It's a main city, it's a major city, but we're not in it. And, you know, we're kind of ready to consider the benefits of having our children not in a city when they were growing up. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but in this particular area that we chose to live, we kind of get the best of both because it's close enough to a major city where we can go there anytime we want. But we also have the benefit of a community that knows each other. There's only like 86 houses in our small development here. So we know our neighbors. We know the parents of the children are the parents of the children that our children are hanging out with. We know their teachers. We see them in the shopping mall, at the grocery aisle, and things of that nature. So those little touches have made a difference in our personal lives. But as I said, I could pick up tomorrow and go back to D.C. or come hang out with you in Alva, Oklahoma, and do it there as well. The dynamics would be different personally, but in terms of the business, it can be done pretty much from anywhere, as long as there's an airport and I got to get in and out, and Wi-Fi connection.
Well, you can always drive to the airport. That's what I do. I'm 2.5-3 hours from the airport, so you can drive.
That's true. I want to be a little closer than that, but
people say that to me.
But you know, that I think for me, Becky, the overarching idea has been, you know, my life had to change when I had children. How it changed was kind of up to me. One of the ways I decided that it should change is in terms of our physical environment. And part of that was brought on too by the loss of a paycheck. The job opportunities that my husband had at the time in his field were small and getting smaller. So we had to look at what we were faced with, not just in the moment, but, you know, the next 10 and 20 years, and where would the opportunities, where were they likely to be more plentiful? It for all of us, not just for me, not just for him, not just for our two little people. We had to look at everyone. So it was a very big decision and very scary in a lot of ways. But again, our approach has always been, we don't go where the opportunity is. We create the opportunity where we are.
Definitely. So tell me about some big opportunity creators in your past, which is your grandparents. You spent a lot of summers with your grandparents. And I think you learned a lot from them about drive and creating opportunity and doing whatever it takes and not giving in.
I did. Thank you for letting me share a little bit about my amazing grandparents, Sally and Orrin McWilliams from Enfield, North Carolina. They were the grandchildren of people who had been born into slavery. They built their home where they raised my mom, one of their five children. They built the home themselves. My grandmother had a sewing machine, and so to make money, she altered clothing and made clothing for people. My grandfather was really good with his hands. So he could build things. So he could repair things. And so he did that. They had a farm. And so their main income came from farming. I spent my summers picking tobacco, cotton, cucumbers, and tomatoes. That's pretty much what I did. Green beans and all the rest of that stuff. But I actually made a little money picking the other stuff because that was at that time what was big and what was really selling, of course, tobacco in North Carolina. So I learned from a very early age that my grandparents, you know, they didn't have jobs. And back in those days, you know, being African Americans, that there, you know, there really weren't any jobs. They had to figure it out on their own. And so today, for different reasons, we see a lot of people in the same situation. You know, the job market is different. No matter what field you are in, it's different from the way it was 15 years ago or for many people when they started. So you do have to figure out something different. And I think a part of me always would look back to my grandparents and even my parents who learned from them the importance of looking around you and finding the opportunity and making it happen. They had dirt. They had fields. So not a lot of fields at first, but they were able to acquire land over time because they had fields. And so they leased their land to other people who had farms. And so they would make money. They would make money that way. They didn't have to work those fields. They had other people paying them so they could work the fields. So there's a quote unquote residual, so to speak. I use that term loosely. Yeah. But the idea is they figured out a way to make money by doing the work. And they also figured out a way to make money by creating other opportunities for other people to work that could also result in income for them. So I watched that. I lived it. I admired it. And when the time came, I was not raised that way. Now, my parents raised me to go to college and get a good job. And I did what I was told. But that didn't work for the long term for me. And so thankfully, I had a chance to see both up front, up close and personal. So when it came time for me to decide what I wanted, I feel like I really did have the blessing of being able to look at both from a realistic perspective and choose the one that worked best for me.
And so how many people are in your town now?
There are about 44,000 or so people here in Monroe.
So to me, that's like a big little town. That's a big town. But yeah. Clearly a lot different experience than D.C. And like you say, that mm-hmm. the fact that you'd had the opportunity to be deeply immersed in that all summer long, repeatedly mm-hmm. during your childhood, mm-hmm. Gave you the strength to make a decision mm-hmm. that could not be easy for someone that had never had that experience.
I think that's true. And I hated every single minute of it as a child. There was no television, Becky. There was no running water and there was no toilet.
I get it. I spent summers with my grandparents, but they had all the comforts.
Mm-hmm.
But
we had
none
of it. We had chamber pots.
Oh my gosh.
And we had to take those things out every single morning. And we bathed in a tub. We would go out and pump the big pail, you know, big, you know, tub size, full of water and bring it in and put it on the stove, the wood stove, and warm it up and take it off the stove and go bathe. That's what we did.
And you would not be the person you are if you hadn't had the opportunity to experience that in your life.
Correct. Completely right. I think looking back, you know, my parents wanted to get away from that life. And I understand that in their generation, you know, the better life, quote unquote, was very different from that. And I understand that. That mentality. And I, for that time, it was true, I think. We all have to adjust to whatever time we're born in. But the fact that I had a chance to see both and empty chamber pots and go outside and, you know, help my grandmother wring the neck of a chicken so we could have dinner and, you know, help to feed the pigs and watch my uncle get bitten by a black snake and have no phone. So we had to walk to a neighbor's house who did have a phone. And all this time, you know, my uncle's, you know, writhing in pain. We had no, there was no way no comforts at all. But we had each other, and my grandparents just made it work. They just made it work. And I think about that in my life all the time when I come across a challenging situation in my business or my personal life. You know, I get down and I have my little depressed moments and I might whine and cry and rant, as you say, do every now and then. But after a little bit of that, I'm like, okay, we're going to make this work. There's not making it work is just not an option. So we're going to make this work.
And I want to add, now there's somebody listening going, well, I don't want to go back to those days. But none of us do. And my point is not that you have to experience no plumbing, no phone, but that you have to experience self-reliance, responsibility, initiative, an absolute feeling that you rely on yourself as opposed to waiting for someone else. And those are the common factors that influenced what your grandparents did. And that I learned from my grandparents in the summers, even though we did have a phone and there was running water and there was electricity and everything, you know, so it was a different level of comforts. The concepts, the basic bedrock principles were the same.
I agree. And, you know, no matter what kind of business you have, if you have been in it for at least, there's no hard and fast cutoff, but I would say 3 to 5 years, you have experienced the equivalent of no toilet. You have experienced the equivalent of no running water. Yeah. Because you've had days go by where people aren't buying anything, no water, right? You've had days go by where perhaps you have needed this piece of technology that you can't afford yet. You have to wait for it. And while you're waiting for it, you have to do it all manually, right? No toilet. So that's an interesting analogy. But
that's good. And you should write that down. And you need
it's a pretty good one now that I think of it. But you have experienced it. And so if you look at your business, everyone listening here is either in that situation, has been in that situation, or will be in that situation. And so if you can just go through it a few times, then you have that to draw on. When were you able to stop doing that thing manually and automate it? When were you able to hire someone to help you? And before that, you had no water. You had to make it yourself. And so you're right, Becky, you don't have to have that exact experience, but you will have something similar in your business and you will get through it. And every time you get through it, you'll be ready to tackle the next one because you'll be a better person. You'll be a more equipped person to tackle the next challenge, the next, you know, lack of water, and propel yourself first and your business with you to the next step.
Very good. Very good. Now, you need to write down that example because you should be sharing that lots of places. That'll be working its way into your speeches next. That'll be
where that shows up. Yeah.
So let's go all the way back to your Women, Wealth, and Wow theme mm-hmm. that you have mm-hmm. for the year. What makes you wow? Because you're a pretty wow person putting on, you do pretty amazing things with your network. You're having your cruise coming up with your network mm-hmm. members. I mean, you do some mm-hmm. amazing things, and it's clear mm-hmm. that you bring a lot of wow to what you do. So what makes you wow?
Mm. What makes me wow is connecting with someone who is excited about what they're doing. That makes me go, wow. So whether you are selling a product or a service, or you are male or female, new in business, old to business, whenever I visit your website or hear you speak, listen to your podcast, follow your Twitter, whatever, I can tell for me when you are excited, when it is not put the needle on the record or do the same thing over and over again. I can perceive that. And that's what makes me say, wow, because even if I'm not your target customer and I don't need what it is you have to offer, I can still appreciate it and tell other people, and I can get excited about someone who has defined what it is that they have to offer, packaged it in a way that makes it available to people and is enjoying what they're doing. I mean, like you, for example, right? You know, I didn't know you when I met you on Twitter, but I could tell that you really believed in what you were doing. I could also tell that you were living it, which makes a difference as well. And that to me is like, you know, I don't have a special interest in small towns, but I have a special interest in a person who, whatever their interest is on fire about it. I don't care what it is, small towns, shoes, churches, whatever it is. If you are on fire about it, I can tell, and I want to connect with you because I will be inspired by you. I will learn from you. And maybe there, maybe we can get together and do something fun one day, like a podcast, maybe not, but that wows me. People who love what they're doing and are putting it out there, doing it every day as a life, as a lifestyle for themselves.
Very good. Very good. So the last question that I have for you today is one that comes from something that I'm doing. I have decided that this is the year that I am going to reread some of the classic books that have really influenced me. And so do you have, if you had the opportunity to go back and reread and relearn from a classic book that you have read sometime in your career, what book would you pick up and read again?
The one that I pick up and read almost every week, and that is The Success Principles by Jack Canfield. I read chapters from that book constantly. They are all underlined, dog-eared, pencil, drawings, all sorts of things, because each one encapsulates a principle that is useful, very useful, and easy to digest, and easy to do, easy to accomplish in your life and in your business. So that's it. Another one, can I name more?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that would be the first one. If you don't have that book, I think it's just been revised too recently, so you can get the revised version.
And that
which
is,
I don't have.
That's The Success Principles by Jack Canfield.
Correct.
Okay.
And I would also say The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. This is a book that talks about how little tiny things that we do every day compound to help us create the results that we want. The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And then the last one I'll mention here, and gosh, there's a long list because I love reading, I love books, would be Tribes by Seth Godin. And everyone pretty much knows who that is. But the Tribes book is so easy to read. I think you could probably knock it out in an hour and a half if you read slow. But it's all about the importance of creating this sort of tribal community effect around your brand, and how no matter what you offer, no matter what kind of business you have, it's important to create that, even if you don't call it a tribe. You could call it community. I don't care what you call it. But the principle of creating this supportive surroundings for yourself that is composed of people and ideas is very important to create the success that you define for yourself in your business. So those are the three that I would say stick out the most to me, Becky.
Very good. Very good. Thank you very much for sharing those. And thank you for taking time to be a return guest, to come back and share a little more of your own story. And promise me that you'll come back when we get another good rant that you and I can go on together.
Thank you for having me, Becky. It's been a pleasure.
Tell everyone where they can find you online and what your websites, your Twitter, and however you prefer to be found online.
Thank you so much for that opportunity. Well, if you are a handmade entrepreneur, an artisan, a creative maker, go to indiebusinessnetwork.com. You can learn more about IBN and the services and the insurance that we offer there. And on a more personal note, for me, donnamaria.com. So if you go to any of those sites, you can get all the social and follow, and we can meet each other and connect and have a great time.
All right. Terrific. Thank you very much, Donna Maria.
Thank you, Becky. Bye-bye.